This September has unfolded very differently from September a year ago, and that's, so far anyway, a very good thing. There's a lot of work left to do to rebuild from the fires that burned through the region starting September 8, 2020. Disasters were declared in parts of both our states, triggering the help of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. FEMA is time-limited and has to pack up after a time. It's been on the job more than a year with some achievements to report, so we welcome back Paul Cora from FEMA's Oregon office with an update on recent activities. Paul, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jeffrey. Yeah, it's been quite a year. I can't believe it's been, it seems like it's been gone by very, very fast.
It really has. And so give us some of the tidbits that you're looking at that indicate where you stand more than a year after starting on things like the Alameda Fire and the South Open Chain and Holiday Farm and Archie's Creek and all the others.
You know, looking back, I think we've accomplished, you know, our main goal is get the people who have no place to live and get them out of hotels and get them into temporary housing, mobile homes, for example, down in Southern Oregon and throughout the whole state. We accomplished that mission, even though it took us a year to do it. But it's been, we got everybody in there, which is, you know, step one. And we also acknowledge that it's going to not just take a year or 2 years. It sometimes takes 3 or more years to rebuild. And I see hope. The landscape has changed. I was just up to San Diego Valley last week, and there's new homes being built, and the businesses are being reconstructed. Logs are being removed. All the debris is getting removed. And the landscape has changed, you know, with all the trees gone, and it is going to be with us for a long time to come.
You were talking just now about the hotels, and we have a question just right along those lines from Vicki in Ashland, who sent in an email already today and says, good morning. So grateful to get some straight overall information from FEMA. Of the 2,300 to 2,500 residences destroyed in the fire, and I'm sure she means Alameda Drive, I'm interested in knowing how many have been replaced, and of those, how many are freestanding structures, hotel, motel rooms, temporary housing, FEMA loans, and how many are permanent replacement homes? Thank you for your help, says Vicki in Ashland.
Well, you know, that information actually, it comes from the state. With me not personally down there, I'm in the northern half of the state. I haven't seen what percentage of the homes were mobile homes. I know the majority of the homes were lost in Alameda Fire were mobile homes, mobile home parks. They are rebuilding those. The private owners are rebuilding the parks, and they're getting some new mobile homes. There's a back order for mobile homes around the United States, so a lot of them are waiting for the mobile homes to get there to be placed. Obviously, we have hundreds of mobile homes on sites, temporary sites, and obviously, as we know, in March, that timeline is up. And so there's lots of activity around that. There's a lot of reconstruction of permanent homes, or I would say stick frame construction, are starting to be rebuilt in Southern Oregon, which is a great sign. So there's insurance money coming out, and then contractors are finally starting to show up, and we're getting enough of them to start. You'll see it going down in Southern Oregon. You'll see new places going up, but it just takes time to get, you know, contractors and lumber, and everything has changed this last year, and it's still changing. So it's, I don't have an exact number for you, but it's, we're seeing signs of hope.
Yeah, I know the state takes care of a lot of this, but I had read recently that there were still more than 500 people in hotels in Jackson County. Is that anything that's available to you at FEMA as knowledge?
You know, there's lots of different programs we have. There's low income. There's so many different programs for even hotels. There's people who are not U.S. citizens are in hotels are being provided by the state. That's something that the FEMA does not provide money-wise for that. That's just U.S. law. But there's lots of different circumstances. And I know there's cases where organizations are buying up hotels and putting people in there. And we acknowledge that, you know, people who live in Oregon need help. And we're somewhat constructive from the federal government, but the state and local governments are there to help because when a disaster strikes locally, when we leave, it's still there. I mean, the local government still has to take care of people.
Yeah, you referenced hotels getting bought by some agencies. That'd be Project Turnkey that the state of Oregon got into, which is involving a purchase of a hotel in Ashland and another one in Medford so far, and some others around the state as well. So yeah, not federal money there. Yeah, I guess we need to have OEM on at some point too, Oregon Emergency Management, and talk about the people that they are caring for, separate from the people that that FEMA is able to provide assistance for. Paul Cora is from FEMA, is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions and comments at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There was a release early in September, Paul, about FEMA expanding the types of documents it will accept as proof of home ownership. Can you walk us through that?
You know, we had a change in individual assistance, and it's how we approach the issue of people who need assistance and what documentations they have. And this is not a new problem. This is an old problem that stemmed from the state of California, from the wildfires in Paradise and other places in California. And we started researching it and said, how can we better provide services and monies to survivors that need it? And it, unfortunately, it's a slow process, so we've been reviewing all what we can do. And finally this year, it should be slightly easier to get disaster relief and a proof of ownership, especially, you know, when a home burns down, there's nothing left. And how can we help the survivors get documentation that they can prove to us that they live there? And that can be as simple as, you know, going to your utility company and getting a utility bill, or maybe talk to your bank and get a copy of your mortgage statement, or the county with your tax statements. So it should be slightly easier. This is a new program for us, and we're trying this out now, actually in Louisiana and other places that disasters have struck. So hopefully over time, we acknowledge it, and we unfortunately this takes us a little more time to catch back up and try to get the benefits to the survivors in a timely manner. And we've done some experiments here in Oregon about outreaching again to different communities and coming back. And if that seems to work. But I think the documentation is a big part of it. And I think that we're going to try a new approach and also be cautious because there's still a lot of fraud out there. So we, you know, it's our tax dollars. So we want to make sure that they go to the right people, and we don't want to be ripped off and give money to people who don't deserve it. So it's a work in progress, I would say.
Is this more of an IT problem? Is it more of a policy problem? I'm just curious to know. I mean, given the concerns about fraud and all the people who, all the seeming people who apply for FEMA help, who perhaps not even are individuals, that cause you to raise the barriers for entry.
You know, it's a policy issue, and I can see it. We could see it come in by years. You know, when we had disasters, when people would take advantage of us, and our I would say, what information we needed to give out benefits, and then we study it, and then, oh, man, there was a bunch of fraud, and we handed out money that shouldn't have gone out. How can we prevent that? So we put in extra layers of, you know, security and extra layers of documentation. And pretty soon it gets overwhelming for a survivor. So we have to balance that out and keep balancing out and also keep an eye out for fraud. And so it's a constant battle for us to make those, you know, weigh everything out and make sure we get enough benefits to the people in need. And we also getting pressure from U.S. Congress, and, you know, survivors talk to them, they talk to us. And so we have a new administration now, and so things do change, our new administrator. So, and that's the direction that she wants to go. And so, which is good. Hopefully it will work.
Do you get situations sometimes where people who are applying for FEMA benefits are told, oh, no, you've already applied, and that is a fraudulent application?
You know, there are cases like that, but that doesn't mean that they can't apply. Is that somebody else may have applied in their name or their address? That's happened in Oregon. Is that, hey, somebody else has applied for you. Now we have a process we go through to verify, you know, why did this happen? I mean, did this other person do this by mistake? Is it a fraud case? This is not unusual, but we won't turn somebody down just because, hey, somebody else has your name, but we'll take a very close look at it. And we've done this many times before, and we're pretty good about spotting fraud when we see it.
Huh. That would seem to be a real challenge to the person who's applying for help, too, because they want to think, oh, okay, good, I applied already. Oh, wait a second. No, I didn't. And who did, though? So what kinds of additional documents are you accepting now that would be a proof of home ownership?
You know, I think we're shifting more on how do you get documentation when you lose everything?
Yeah.
So again, we talked about utility bills and other people who may live with you that pay rent, you know, get their statements. So you know, we're less like we're trying to think outside the box. How can we get better documentation quicker and through other agencies, not just something you have at home? But you know, maybe you can call your insurance company. Have you been paying your insurance bill? All we need is a letter from them, or you know, something over the internet. There's lots of different ways we can better get the information in quicker, so we can get the monies out to survivors that they need it, who desperately need it.
Are you confident at this point that everybody who would have been eligible for FEMA assistance in Oregon has applied?
We are very confident. We've been making calls, and people who have applied, and if they've gotten turned down, they've gotten multiple phone calls from us and through the state, and we set up multiple areas where they can come in and talk in person. This is the first time we've ever done this, was reaching out and reaching out and reaching out, and in some cases, we still couldn't help. They may have been covered by insurance and they thought they should get more money from the federal government, or a misunderstanding, and that happens. But at least they know, and they shouldn't be like, "Well, I never knew." I don't think that's ever going to be the case now, because the efforts that we made, and hopefully nobody slips through the cracks.
Paul Kaur is our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange, a public information officer with FEMA based in Oregon. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, back with an update on FEMA activities now that we're more than a year into the process of rebuilding from the September 8th, 2020 fires. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I think last time we had talked, Paul, you had finished with the last of the places where you were installing the mobile homes brought in by FEMA.
Yes, we completed everything in Talent in Phoenix, which is good. We do have a staging site in Gardner, Oregon. We do have some mobile homes down there, so now we're deciding what our next steps are going to be. Of the extra ones, can we work with the state and survivors? You know, if they can't afford a new mobile home, can we sell the ones that we already brought in the state to them? That's a very good possibility. So we're looking at that right now. I would say the next couple of months, we're going to get some movement on that. And then the March date, like I said, we have a team already looking at what we're going to do. And we're not going to kick anybody on the street, but there needs to be a plan, and you know, maybe possibility of selling the mobile homes to the survivors, and then maybe how do we get them to a new site? All these different, it's like a Ouija board sometimes, trying to figure everything out. But we have a good plan here in the state about what we're going to go further in future, and what we're going to do. But another thing has happened. I think I talked months and months ago that, you know, we're here in force, but we had hurricanes that came through Louisiana, and part of our team is split up and responding to in the southern part of the United States. So some of the, our team has shrunk here in Oregon. This is probably the last time I'll talk to you on this show, because after today, I'm moving on to the next disaster. So, but there are people here in Oregon, and we have our regional office up in Seattle is going to be handling the disaster here in Oregon until Oregon no longer needs us.
Well, you live in Oregon, though, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, but so you might be sent out to handle some of the additional issues in other parts of the country?
That's part of the job sometimes. Mm-hmm. You get sent across the United States to help out other survivors.
To the 18-month issue, if people are able to buy the mobile homes from FEMA and the park is okay with them staying and they're paying rent to them, is that a workable situation? So in other words, they wouldn't have to move either themselves or the unit?
Well, I can't speak for all the mobile home sites, but some of them, they may be able to stay there. Right now, we're in talk with the owners about what their long-term goals are. We promised them a temporary sites, and then you know, what what are we going to do after March? And so we're having talks right now. My indication right now is that we'll have this all kind of sewn up by the first of the year. So a lot more information will be coming out to the survivors about what their options are with the owners. And so we have a few more months working on this issue. But rest assured the survivors that they can stay in the mobile homes until March. And then they'll get updates all the time from the state of Oregon about where we're at, you know, what the rebuilding is. If they lived in a rental beforehand, what is the status of the owners? Have they rebuilt their rental home or not, or the apartments? They should be getting definitely information up front and quickly and often.
But are there situations in which, if no other recourse has been found, that FEMA comes in March and takes the manufactured homes away?
You know, I don't think we're, like I said, we're not going to be kicking anybody out on the streets. But we also say this is not a long-term solution. So if somebody has no place to live, this is not a free place to live. And in some cases, and if they have no place to go, and they don't make any efforts to try to find a place to live, this is not a long-term solution. In some cases, that may be the case.
All right. So basically, it's not just the mobile homes. All FEMA activities pretty much end 18 months after the disaster declaration?
Yeah, officially on the rules. But like I said, we can extend that, and we don't have an extension date yet, but we're looking at those. Officially, we don't have an extension date yet, but like I said, after the first of the year, we'll see where we're at and see where we're going to go. This happened down at Katrina where we had mobile homes, and some of those stayed around for years and years and years. And local officials didn't want to see that, and so and that's why the law is around. So I understand both sides. It's a complicated issue, and you know, Oregon's not the most wealthiest state in the world, and so how do we get the local governments and volunteer organizations to help get people housed? I mean, that's an issue throughout the state, in the state of Washington and California. It's nothing new to Oregon. It's a big issue, and we'll just take a piece at a time.
I'm looking at the numbers here. It looks like FEMA, by your numbers, had spent something like $161 million in Oregonians, or to Oregonians, by the first week of July. Has it gone up since then, or was that the bulk of the money already spent by then?
You know, we're around that number. I don't think the debris cost is coming yet totaled, and that was going to be, you know, another $60 million on top of that. So we'll be way above $250 million for this disaster that we'll probably be spending in this state. The final numbers won't come in until later, obviously, and then public works projects that we're helping pay for, like water systems up in Detroit and other places, that's a long-term issue, so cost, and we those will come in later.
Okay. A lot more still left to be done, obviously. As you mentioned, it could be 3 years or more to get everything going again. But FEMA's part ends at 18 months, and Paul Cora himself sounds like he's moving on, so we're not going to talk to you again, it sounds like. Paul, thanks for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange.
Again, thank you, radio station and your listeners.